The country's cops have for more than a decade been waiting to get the legal go-ahead to use what's known as the grabber. The grabber has been in the South African consciousness for quite some time now, but now the South African Police Service have been given the go-ahead to use the mass surveillance cell phone grabbers. But what does it mean when it comes to privacy? What does it mean for you and I using our phone and through some sort of crime intelligence operation, maybe targeting organized criminals? Are the South African police, or is the South African Police Service listening in on your conversations? We find out. Murray Hunter is a digital rights researcher at ALT Advisory. I'm very fortunate to be able to grab you and some of your time, Murray Hunter. The grabber has been in our consciousness in South Africa, largely used as a political tool. There've been used talks about espionage, and but now it's being able to get the go ahead for the South African Police Service to actually use it. Why would a grabber machine be important to fighting crime?
Sure. So just so people know what this is, it's essentially a kind of device that's like a mobile surveillance unit. It could be about the size of a suitcase or a car battery, and if you switch it on, it basically acts almost like a fake cell phone tower, and cell phones in that area will connect with this kind of grab, and it uses it to sort of monitor which phones are in the area and identify them and perhaps, you know, sort of analyze some of the information coming out of those phones. So, you know, the police will say they need this kind of thing if, you know, if they're trying to track a suspect in the area and they're trying to identify what number that person is using, or, you know, trying to monitor a conversation between, let's say, two drug smugglers, you know, at Cape Town Harbor or whatever. You could use something like this to sort of remotely surveil them. The problem is that once you turn on one of these devices, it can, you know, it can be used for mass surveillance. And as you said, the reason that there's so much controversy around these devices is that when crime intelligence previously had them, when state security previously had them, they were being used as political tools and potentially used for illegal surveillance. And so what has happened is basically, you know, because of the controversy around these things, it seems that the permission was revoked, and finally permission has been re-granted to use them. What's important, though, is there's been this growing body of evidence and concern about how state spying has been abused. We saw 2 years ago the Constitutional Court essentially ruled that key parts of our surveillance law are unconstitutional because of how it's been abused. And what we need to be sure is that whatever technology the police is using, they still need to follow the law. They still need to make sure that no surveillance only happens if it's a legitimate criminal investigation. It always needs the permission of a judge. It always needs to have a certain amount of transparency and protection built in. And I think that to some extent, the police need to be reminded of this, because the fact that they've been permission to use this technology is concerning enough, but they haven't been given permission to, you know, haven't been given carte blanche. They still need to obey the law.
So in the past, and is still the case, you would need the permission. You'd have to apply to what's known as the RICA judge for permission to institute surveillance on a suspect on legal grounds. But in theory, that you could actually be targeting a particular legitimate crime, a criminal entity, but what the grabber does, it almost does a dragnet. It brings everyone's cell phone signals and records and data into one net. And would RICA still come into play if, by chance, while I'm trying to investigate this particular organized crime, I may have listened in on Lester's conversation, and Lester is trying to, you know, small fry stuff. And don't say I do any stuff. I'm not incriminating myself. But would it still require the permission of the RICA judge or to enter that particular evidence if, you know, police would want to charge you?
So absolutely. I mean, I guess this is the problem, is that the police have in the past have used getting permission from the RICA judge as like a I guess that they have only tried to get the permission of the RICA judges when they thought they needed to show someone that piece of paper before they could do surveillance. They haven't done it because it's the right thing to do. They've done it because they've kind of when they've had to. And something like this kind of technology, unfortunately, like once you know, it gives a huge amount of power to the person operating it, and so they've tried to kind of use it in less wholesome ways. And I think less the point is that we are really concerned that it's not at all clear how you can kind of operate with this sort of technology in a way that's still in line with the law, in the way that is just like it follows checks and balances, it follows the rule book. And to be honest, I mean, it's actually up to the government to explain exactly how they plan to use this technology in a way that's in line with the law and in the way that's in line with what the Constitutional Court found 2 years ago when it ruled that certain aspects of our surveillance operations were illegal. And I think it's really important that you're having this conversation because we all need to be asking those questions.
Murray, I've seen very superficial, if any, movement in the restructuring of South African intelligence services, and post the Mufumadi high level review panel on state security. There's also issues around crime intelligence. I don't necessarily trust that any surveillance equipment would be used for purely policing aspects. The Mufumadi report has shown that crime intelligence, state security has often played an active role in South Africa's politics. How has then the South African police service been given essentially carte blanche to use this particular machine if we can't trust that the police won't use this for purely policing and not getting involved in politics?
So that's just, I don't know how you got so cynical. But it's that phrase carte blanche that worries me, because I think we need to be absolutely clear that essentially what the law currently says is that there's a restriction, there's a general ban on anybody getting their hands on this kind of technology. So it's a ban. You can't go down to Incredible Connection and buy yourself a grabber. And essentially all that has happened is that the police have been given a temporary exemption that they, if they need to, could acquire and possess this kind of tech. But I think you're certainly right. There are these, you know, these real questions. This is the same crime intelligence, the same state security that we saw playing all kinds of dirty tricks and corruption during state capture. Not enough has changed about these institutions for us to say we feel okay with these guys having grabbers of any kind. And so I think that we have big questions about whether they need this kind of technology and whether it can be used lawfully. But now that the stuff is potentially out in the wild, what you would want to see is, let's say, the 5 or 10 grabbers that may be in possession of government nationally need to be treated almost like nuclear waste, as in at any given time, it is clearly understood where each of these pieces of equipment is. It's handled with a great deal of care. Whenever it's transferred from one person to another, there's essentially a bit of paperwork that says, this is where this device is, this is where it's in operation, this is why it's in operation. And all that stuff is being documented and disclosed to the necessary, kind of like to the oversight bodies. So I think that's the only way that you can have this kind of technology in use in a way that feels at least acceptable. And unfortunately, I think that the kinds of places where these questions are being asked are on drive time radio. I don't think that it's actually happening. We don't have any sense that the actual people who are in charge or meant to be in charge are actually asking these kinds of questions and getting satisfactory answers. And so that's the next step. We want to see the Department of Justice and Parliament actually applying the same kind of diligence that the good listeners of Cape Talk are, because it's really, it is a very worrying situation.
Murray, the good listeners of Cape Talk are very worried about message encryption, and there's enough messages on my WhatsApp line to ask, what about WhatsApp conversations? Does Grabber override WhatsApp encryption? I don't know if you have any technical knowledge, but there's enough questions on our WhatsApp line to warrant me asking you that.
I should say Grabber is a kind of technology. It's not an actual device. It's not like a kind of a brand name. So they've got different levels of capability, but the answer is no, we don't think that something like this would be able to read WhatsApp messages. What it would do is, you know, at the kind of basic level, is sort of be able to identify a particular SIM card or device and just detect whether or not it's interacting with the cell phone network. It's not reading the content that's coming across necessarily. And so, you know, it may be able to read SMSs or kind of listen in on voice messages, voice calls like this one, at a more sophisticated level. But we think things like WhatsApp, at least this sort of device isn't reading your WhatsApp. So you can send memes to your uncle feeling secure in that knowledge.
Murray Hunter, digital rights research at ALT Advisory, really.